With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, no, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on ChumbaCasino.com. I looked over the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Coincidence? I think not. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere, even at 30,000 feet. So sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's ChumbaCasino.com and live the Chumba life.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
What is happening, PGA DFS fans? It is the strategy show here on Tuesday of the PGA Championship weekend. We have got a fun-filled show, some breaking news just coming out in a little bit, which is leading me into some conspiracy theories that, of course, I'm going to be going over with Ben Raza. But before we get into all that, we, of course, want to thank all of you for joining and, of course, for our presenting sponsor, Monkey Knife Fight. And last week, Ben, we had a pretty good read on the golf tournament, and we were able to cash in on that over on Monkey Knife Fight using their player props based contest. Last week, the line was set at 19 and a half birdies. And both Ben and I said, listen, you got to go over on that. The par fives are too reachable. And we were right, both on Jordan Spieth, Daniel Berger, and pretty much whoever was offered if you chose them. So this week, Ben, over on Monkey Knife Fight, you're going to get a first $100 deposit with your first deposit using promo code AWESOMO. And second, the line is set at 12 and a half birdies. Pretty much anybody you want to choose from. Dustin Johnson is there, who we'll certainly talk about here in a little bit. A couple of others. So it's a nice lead in to talk about Kiawah Island, the golf course. Do you think 12 and a half birdies is too low? I do, even with the difficult par fives ahead.
I do too. So what we saw, and you know, 2012 is a long time ago. It's not the end all be all, but outside of that Friday, where the course was like six strokes over par, you saw that these guys, they could make birdies, they could score. It was just they also had some holes that are going to yield some doubles and whatnot. So I don't think this is going to be a week where there's just like no birdies. You're going to see some streaks. You're going to see some bonuses. You're also going to see some big numbers. So I would go over. I think the best players in the world will be able to handle this track, even if it is difficult.
And now we've seen in the past the PGA Championship certainly be the softer of the majors. Now, granted, the last couple of years, we've had Bethpage Black, so it kind of goes against that. And even here in 2012, certainly, you know, minus five being second place, we won't even talk about Rory. It does show that this golf course can be rather difficult. So let's just do a little quick preview. You and I were talking a bit before. It's kind of hard to kind of guess or go a certain way with the course, given that it's 7,900 yards, but it's also firm and fast. So that'll negate some of the carry distance advantage that some of the golfers have. Of course, we got 156 golfers, but really 136, as there are 20 Jason Roslins, so to speak, in the field. Certainly much better than me, but along the lines of what I did in my past life as a PGA professional, and the top 70 in ties make the cut, Ben. So probably a good 6 of 6 percentage this week.
Yeah, it's always difficult to get 6 of 6. You know, we talk about that a lot in our premium Slack. But when you start whittling this field down, you just mentioned, you've got 20 or so guys that realistically maybe one makes the cut. So now you're down to like 136. You add five more spots with top 70. You have some players, Euro and Asian Tour players, that it's not that they can't make the cut, but there's probably another 10 guys that are probably doubtful. Yep. You're almost looking like an invitational field when you get down to it. So I think that does change the build a little bit. I'm not going to overreact, but it's not nearly as hard as some of these player championships and whatnot, where you got a full field and every single player in there is live to make the cut.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that when I first saw Rory McIlroy priced at 11,500, my initial first reaction was, well, it's rather sharp pricing this week. And I think I still have that thought a little bit, but given the fact that it does play more of an invitational, I think it's an appropriate price, and throwing in Thomas above 11,000 as well.
Yeah, I have no problem with it. I mean, Rory's on the, he's got the rare, you know, the double going. He won at Wells Fargo and he won at Kiawah Island many, many years ago. So it's not a surprise. I don't think we would have seen that if Rory was coming off another miscut. He would be certainly down, and we'd be talking about he's in big trouble with the Masters, with Wells Fargo, but that was not the case. Obviously, did the complete opposite of that. So it's warranted. Pricing's a little difficult, but with all these guys, it's going to be fun. I'm excited to talk about this because the 6K range is not the typical 6K range. There's a lot of names that we don't see week in and week out here.
We sure do. And let's start off breaking down some of these players. We've already mentioned a few, but one that's making the waves and certainly some breaking news right now is Dustin Johnson. So now I'm going to look way into this rabbit hole because that's, of course, what we like to do when we're given this information. But featured groups and tee times were just announced, and a glaring omission from the featured groups was Dustin Johnson. In his place, and given the group that was broken out, looked like it should be Dustin Johnson, but instead it's Ricky Fowler, who clearly hasn't had a top 10 in, I think, this entire season, but yet they don't want to put the number one player in the world there. The number one player in the world also withdrew last week from the event. And now his interview, which was supposed to be in a couple of hours, was moved to tomorrow. So Ben, I've got two theories for you. The first one is probably the easiest one to figure out, and that's, okay, there's a withdrawal coming, or there's some type of test that we're waiting for, and something is not right here. Okay, that's one. The other theory that is kind of a longer dated theory, and that's that he's in forever purgatory from the PGA of America. I think the worst ruling in major championship history goes back to the 2010 showing of this event, where they penalized him two strokes after the event and took away his chance to win it. And in my opinion, one of the worst calls. Now we fast forward to this year. That call has been removed from the equation this year. You can play pretty much any way you want to out of the bunkers or sandy areas. And I think that the PGA of America just wants that to be gone. They don't want it to be talked about. So the way for it not to be talked about, don't put Dustin Johnson on coverage. Now, if you had to pick one of those two theories, which would it be? And secondly, do you think I might be looking too far into this?
Probably, but that's why we love the show. So the first one, we'll see. I, like I said, I have no idea, but when I saw him withdraw from Byron Nelson, at no point did I think that his chances to play here would be in jeopardy. Maybe that's unveiled between now and Thursday, but to me, it was just, you know what? Sorry, Dallas. I'm going to just get some extra reps, get rested, hang out on the boat and do what he does, and he'll be ready to go. Now, I do think there may be something with the feature coverage and whatnot. Dustin's an interesting situation across the board this week. He's not really being talked about. He's a guy that obviously in a lot of majors has come in some cases, almost overwhelming favorite. Yep. And that is not the case here. The game has been a little kind of stuck in neutral. And then you pair in this kind of unknown, and I know where you're taking it a little, and that is an interesting dynamic. It is tough though to see what we really have seen recently with him has been not great, but we also have to keep in mind it was at Heritage and Valspar. And although Pete Dye, obviously there's some characteristics, there's also a lot different with the Ocean Course and Harbor Town. So I'm not sure where I really fall on him this week.
If we're talking about all other variables removed from the equation, and we're just looking at ownership and Dustin Johnson, I think he presents as a great play this week. Now, of course, the other variables in there are going to be a little questionable, but right now we have him projected at less than 10% owned. In fact, we have all three of the top price guys projected at less than 10% owned. And if you want to check out the full field ownership projection, that is free today. So nice little peek behind the curtain, Ben, for those non-Osmo Plus subscribers. And of course, if you want to get all of the data and tools that we've got, how about PGA? Just $8.95 for the week. And we've also got a Gold Rush promo going on, Ben, right? 25% off an Osmo Plus Platinum Monthly Pass. So many sports right now, a great time to do so. So check out those ownership projections. You see that the top three are all projected under 10%. You have a lean then of the guys you want to target in the, say, $20 millionaire maker this week?
So, yeah, I mean, I do think part of it is contest dependent. Like, I'm much more apt to go to DJ in something like that than maybe a smaller field just because range of outcomes. And you're talking about the best players in the world. Justin Thomas is the guy that I still find myself, even though I'm initially not drawn to him, the more I look, it's really just a putting issue. And that's an issue. There's no doubt he's going to have to flip that. But the tee to green game is unbelievable. The approach game is a short list of best in the world. Yep. Around the green is solid enough. He's won a PGA championship, ironically, at Quail Hollow. And he just played Wells Fargo, and he was pretty good again. So I think that JT presents a good opportunity. Obviously, if you wanted to go pay $200 for Rory, I mean, I'm never going to fault that. But I think Justin Thomas is one that I'm really looking to zero in on a lot of different builds.
Me too. I am totally in line with you. At this point, the $800 between Justin Thomas and John Rahm and the expected more ownership going to Rahm, I'm not going to say it's easy for me to get, but I think that if Thomas just matches the field in putting, he's got a chance to win with how good he's striking it. Three eagles at Innisbrook. I mean, that's almost unheard of. But he pulled it off, and granted, he had probably his worst putting week that week and still came in the top 15. So I absolutely love that. Now we get into the same more chalkier golfers in this above 10K. We're starting with Thomas. I have tried mightily in, say, my first, what I would consider my best lineup, to get Thomas and Spieth in there. I think that they're clearing away the best form of these guys above 10K right now. Even with Rory's win a couple of weeks ago, I know that's probably saying a little bit too much, but I found it, or I'm finding it hard. Are you finding it the same way, or are you able to say Spieth and Thomas or DeChambeau and Thomas?
It's difficult. I wanted Rahm and JT, and that's putting a further strain on it.
Yes,
so yes. Can it be done? Yes, but you're really allocating a ton of salary and you need them to soak up a bunch of placement points.
Sure.
You're going to completely wipe out the nines, probably the eights maybe, if you do that. So you want to keep that in mind. I would agree, though, but just going back to what you said, Rory, he won, but his form had been terrible. I would know. You know, Spieth has been doing it for a while now. Obviously, JT's in form. I think the guy that no one really knows what you're going to get is Bryson, and that's kind of a week-to-week thing. He's got a plan. When he executes it, it seems so simple of, why don't I target this guy? You know, he solved golf. You just be hyper-aggressive. You get those. You can work out of the rough. You're closer to the hole. But when it's off, I feel like he has more trouble than these other guys of just posting a two under, a one under there. It feels like when he loses it, he completely loses it. And that's a scary proposition at majors.
Especially with the guy $100 cheaper. And you know, I'm not going to tout that much, but Spieth has been able to put together exactly what you just said, a one or a two under when he's got nothing else going for him. It's just the difference in the player, right? If DeChambeau was fully on and he's going to be on for 4 days, I'll take him over Spieth. But we haven't seen him be fully on since mid-March now. So for me, maybe a spot of regression. Maybe look to him at the U.S. Open, where maybe it's a better setup. Who knows? We'll of course, see. Torrey Pines does favor the Bombers maybe a little bit more. In any case, all right, I think we're done with the 10K. I think we both agree. I am going to try and force Thomas and Spieth in one of my better lineups. I've been trying. I want to. We'll have to talk about how to do that, of course, later on. Going to have to really rely on the Alex Norins of the world.
Oh, yeah.
Maybe we can. Maybe we can. If we don't want to do that, I think most people are going to start with, say, Victor Hovland, 9,300 this week, but playing as if he should be priced, say, with Jordan Spieth and such, 27, 26% owned. Are you going to play that chalk? Because in recent history at majors, this price chalk has really, really excelled.
Don't I know it? I mean, and that is not my MO with majors. It's tough. I truly not to blindly fade chalk, but when Morikawa won the PGA, he was mega chalk. And DJ winning the Masters was very, it can happen now. These guys are chalk for a reason. They check out most of the boxes, if not all of them. Doesn't mean they're going to play well per se, but I like what Hovland's doing. I think it's an easy comparison to compare Hovland to Rory in a lot of regards. And we saw what Rory did at the height of his powers here. The ball striking is phenomenal. it's a simple formula. If Hovland is going to gain 4 strokes putting as he did in recent weeks, he's going to contend every week. Third.
Yeah, absolutely.
I mean, and his only, you know, his wins have come on this, whatever this grass is. I don't know what the hell it's, what's it called?
Pass Seashore Pass Palom. Yeah.
Yeah, whatever that is. But whatever. It seems
the Pat Perez special. Yeah.
Yeah, the Pat Perez special. Well said. I'm not reading a ton into that, but there is something that he won at OHL and he won at Puerto Rico. So I get why Hovland's popular. I will absolutely play him. But when I do, that's where I'm going to mix it up. And I'm going to go to some of these guys that maybe aren't getting a ton of love because he's very, very popular this week.
Honestly, I really think it has a lot to do with the green surfaces being a bit slower with this type of grass. I mean, it's just a little bit harder, you know, in true bent grasses like we see at Augusta. They're super quick. The other thing about Hovland that I want to talk about is he's been so good in all types of majors, right? I think his worst performance is 33rd, and that was as an amateur at the Masters. So he's just been able to get it done. The other thing, crazy stat, I was looking up the millionaire maker for the Masters, right, Ben? 250,000 plus lineups. The total ownership of the winning lineup, which was not duplicated, 116%. Only one golfer under 10% owned. Obviously, that was Matsuyama. But can you guess the one thing that this lineup did that most others don't?
I would assume if you're gonna concentrate ownership to that level, you probably need to leave money on the table.
Bingo. They left $400 on the table.
That washes away all concerns. You can have chalky guys. Yep. Your paths can be a little narrow at times, but you know what? You will be unique. And there's no doubt if you really like the chalk, that's a way to do it. You just have chalk that doesn't fit like a perfect puzzle because most people are trying to zero that out in the millie. Look at that. That's a great point to bring up. You're talking about almost 20% per spot.
Yep.
And you're still unique.
It had Spieth 33% owned, had Schauffele 20% owned, had Corey Connors 30% owned, had all of the good chalk mixed in with one Hideki Matsuyama. Again, it's a great way to build. Had Will Zalatoris, who, you know, 7,300. Yeah. We'll get into talk about him very soon here in a bit because it's a lot harder to play him this, you know, this week at 8,800. But a couple of other guys that I want to talk about in this 9K range, maybe going a little bit under talked about, a pair of Patricks. One of them, Cantlay, certainly warranted to not get the talking. But Patrick Reed, I mean, this conditions firm, fast, got to be good tee through green, 10% owned. I think he might be a target for me in at least 15 to 20% of my Millie Maker lineups this week.
Yeah, I mean, Reed is someone that I was actually a little surprised. Usually, I think it's a product of Cantlay. Normally, Cantlay is one of the many chalk, and Patrick Reed is like 5% because tee to green, he doesn't grade out nearly as good. But this guy can play. I know people don't like Reed, and that's a whole different debate on if that's warranted. Probably is, but regardless.
This week, we don't have to worry about that stuff, though, right?
I don't care.
He's like, right in.
I played Reed all the time because he just knows what he's doing. He is an elite short game player. All conditions, he grinds. His ability to make cuts, even when he doesn't have it, it's not to say that you're looking for made cuts up top, but at the same time, it just is. It's a thing, and these guys can climb the board. Reed is great. He does it differently, but similar to Spieth in the sentence that sometimes it seems unsustainable what they do, but obviously they have a knack for it. And I have no problem with Reed. The guy I have to ask you about is your boy, though. This is a great buy low spot if you think he's okay, but he's shown absolutely nothing in a month in terms of Cantlay.
No, it really isn't. And listen, we haven't projected about 7% owned right now, which I think a lot to do with that is the massive general public coming into play this week will say, whoa, Patrick Cantlay, Ryder Cupper, $9,000, set a couple of course records this year. We got to play him. I think that ownership gets lower and lower the higher stakes you go and the lower limited entries you have. So if you think that this could be a spot, which, listen, on Jan 1, my buddy Jeff Ulrich, who you know does the Monday shows, him and I ironed out the PGA Championship for Patrick Cantlay at the beginning of the year because we thought that it would be a course where the driving distance that maybe DeChambeau has over him would be negated because of the firm, fast conditions, and that he's good everywhere, and you're going to need that on an island course. Again, the form, obviously, if you would have told me Jordan Spieth would be $1,100 more than Patrick Cantlay and we'd be okay paying that, we'd all be crazy to think that. We're here. I'd rather play Colin Morikawa, who we have not talked about, and I think probably get similar ownership. What do you think about Morikawa? 9,900, more expensive than Xander Schauffele. That's probably going to be hard for people to click this week.
Yeah, that's the interesting part. I like Xander. He checks all the boxes. He's just, what can you say? The guy gains everywhere. His resume speaks for itself. He's done everything you could do in majors except win.
That'll change
eventually. He's a damn good player. Morikawa, listen, I mean, Paul Casey and multiple other players gave it their best shot, and Morikawa just took the PGA last year at Harding Park. He was phenomenal. Obviously, everyone remembers the short par four, but he did everything. I will point out, he exploded putting that week. And if he does that, when you're talking about irons to his caliber, if he putts at all, he's going to be there. So I get it. I do think it's a little heavy in terms of you're paying a massive premium. But similar to JT, if I'm trying to be objective here, Colin Morikawa strikes it every bit as well as anyone on tour. It's just the putter holding him back.
Yeah, and if these fairways play as wide as suggested, I can't imagine Morikawa is going to miss many, and would be a great start to your career than backing up your first major with another PGA Championship. And of course, it's not that far out of the realm to go back-to-back, as we saw the guy priced at 9,400 this week do it at the U.S. Open and the PGA Championship. Of course, I'm talking about Brooks Koepka. And listen, I was talking to some other golf fans today. One of them, my dad, was in the conversation, and I said to him, listen, if Brooks Koepka is healthy, he's clearly shown he's one of the best players in the world. But he's not, and there's no reason for me to play him this week. I even at the 2%, Ben, it's not worth it. He's not there. And why not take a year off and just get what you need to get done to get healthy?
Yeah, I mean, Brooks is Brooks. He does what he does. I'm not really interested. His press conference, it's just not there. He's clearly not healthy. And can he find it for 4 days? I guess it's possible. You're just incurring so much other risk that basically no other players have. Brooks is dealing with a multitude of things. And he said, I literally just watched his presser, that the doctor said in 6 months, he could be back to 100%.
Six months. Just don't play and it'll probably be 3 months.
I you know, it's obviously at Augusta with the hills and the, you know, it was not even worthy of talking about him. Here, I think it's a little easier, but he did nothing last week.
Nothing.
I still think this is a long-term project, and you just can't pay $9,500 for a guy that is just working with so much extra baggage at this point.
Not when you got Hovland striking it as good as he has and has such good performances in majors cheaper. I just can't do it. I don't even care about the ownership. I really don't. I know that Hovland's maybe a million times more owned. It really doesn't matter to me here. All right, let's move into the 8K range. I think we talked about everybody except for Webb Simpson, who has made the cut in the last seven majors, Ben, but he's in the Brooks camp. I mean, bad neck at home. I don't know. I'm just not playing. We can move on to Cam Smith if you want.
I mean, I don't want to do that. I will say real quick, though, and I've done a couple shows so far, and this 9K range gets hit hard, and this has happened on both shows. The Masters champ, Hideki Matsuyama, has not been mentioned. And it's pretty interesting that he breaks through, and no one wants to talk about him. If he would have come in second at the Masters, I think everyone would be talking about him. But it's just very interesting. He's still striking it phenomenal. Obviously, his putter is another one that it clicked at Augusta. That's a rarity, but I think at 9,400 in tournaments, don't forget about Hideki at what's going to be low ownership.
Let's talk about Hideki for a second, because I think it's very worthy. The start last week was more encouraging to me than it was less encouraging to me, because we know that he probably didn't even pick up a golf club the entire time. He had to quarantine in Japan, so we know he wasn't playing unless, of course, he wasn't being photographed playing or what have you. We know that he went through the talk shows. He went, you know, got that big award from the prime minister. It honestly looked like his game was rather sharp for Hideki in the fact that it was the first time he's played in a month. So I agree. 8%. Be silly not to put him in your Millie Maker lineups. I think he's great leverage. And even if you take away the win, Ben, his performance in majors has been pretty darn good over the last 2 years. So I like Hideki, definitely in a good spot. Going to be tough for me in my main lineup to get there if I am going to play Spieth and Thomas, but a really good MME target for sure. Cam Smith, another guy that just kind of shows up, but I don't have as much ownership because I think two guys, Abraham Ancer and Joaquin Neiman, are on the same trajectory as him and $1,000 cheaper. So are you in the same spot as me, or are you trying to leverage Cam Smith at 13%?
Definitely not trying to leverage him. I have been on the wrong side of Cam Smith. He's a very difficult play because this is a guy that at times he's been in like the low sevens, and now he's up in basically the 9K range. And I get it. The form he won at Zurich, he's been great. I just can't. Him and Will Z, if they beat me, they beat me. I just think right now you're buying at such a top. I have to look to some of the guys that are downrange. It frees up salary. I need the money. Nothing against Cam Smith. He's a damn good player. But to me, there are better options in the lower eights.
Here's where I'd take a cash versus a GPP build ideal and say Patrick Reed, Cam Smith in a cash setting probably is something that I would look into. Even adding Victor Hovland in there, maybe you're a little too aggressive. But starting with those three or two of those three, I don't think you can go wrong. But I think if you're trying to get the optimal lineup here and you think the winner comes from above 10K, you're going to have to go to Ancer and Neiman instead of Smith as that third guy if you're trying to get two up there. So for me, that's kind of the way I'm going. And it does leave out Will Zalatoris. Now, let me ask you about the second chalkiest guy of the slate, or maybe third. That's Daniel Berger. 62 on Sunday vaulted him all the way up the leaderboard. But you'd have to go all the way back to Shinnecock Hills in 2018 to get a top 10 at a major. So you a bit worried about the major performance like Ty Hatton, or you think this is a spot for Berger to overcome it?
Yeah, it's tough. I'll be honest. I don't worry about that too much because these guys, they don't do it. I just said this in our premium Slack. They don't do it till they do it. You know, this guy can't perform at majors. If he's really good, he'll be just fine. And Daniel Berger, when healthy, is very good. I guess my biggest question is that he's a pretty stark guy of where he likes to play. St. Jude's, Pebble, Porter, like these type of tournaments are more technical than brute strength. Now, if it's firm and fast, maybe some of that will be negated to him, but I do worry a little about what this course offers, particularly if the winds are swirling and it's playing in your face on some of these holes. So I'll have him in the pool. If he's 20 to 25%, though, I don't think I can get over.
Surprise, I'll be underweight on Daniel Berger
shocker.
This week. Shocker. Now, I will say last week, 10-1, he ended up coming in as 10% because I think people at the last minute were like, oh, let's just go play Spieth if Berger's going to be the same ownership. And Berger was the play. And in those shootout events, he is showcasing himself to be a very worthy Webb Simpson-esque type of player in those kind of. It wasn't a weak field by any stretch last week, but it was a weaker field, and it was obviously a shootout. So that's where I want to target Berger, and I'm going to make a mental note that even if he's projected at 15 or 20, he's probably a good play like Webb Simpson is in a lot of those cases. So now that we move a little bit down the board, Tommy Fleetwood, Sungjae Im, Justin Rose, I think they did the flip. DraftKings did the flip this week. You take 7,900 down to 7,600. Just flip those names, and that's what they should have been priced. So I think it's going to create some ownership bubbles around there. Any guys that you want to play, regardless of ownership, though?
So, yeah, I think this is a range where I think a dark horse winner could come from in the lower eights. You've got a lot of Euros. You've got a lot of English players. These are the guys that I think there's a lot of risk with basically all of them. But at the same time, I find myself willing to buy Fleetwood. Is a guy, he's flashed at times. Wells Fargo gained across the board. He is 75-1 in the outright market. I don't think that's crazy.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18+ terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
I don't think I can click Rose. I just can't do it. Ty Hatton is there. Fitzy, if you want to go back off a just nonsensical miscut, he clearly didn't have it at Byron Nelson. I don't know what that was. But are you interested in this lower range here? Oosty is there as well. There's a lot of names.
There's Oosty, seven straight major cuts. You know, I went back seven, and that's why I keep bringing that up in my analysis this week that I put in the data article that, of course, I do on the site for free. Check it out if you guys haven't yet and want to see some of the stuff that I'm talking about. Oosty is one that has made the cut. He's also coming second in every single major, Ben. So his game really does translate anywhere. He's got every piece that you'd want. He keeps the ball in the fairway. He's good with his long irons. He's good around the green. He's good on the green, especially this year. I think he's ranked first in strokes gained putting. love to see it. So he'd be the one I'm most interested in. Tommy Fleetwood is, of course, you know, I think he's a guy, and I wrote in our pre-notes here, Ben, he's a guy that all of us root for, but none of us want to play right now. And I think it makes sense. You know, we like the charismatic nature that he brings and the locks, of course. But I'm much more willing to play the chalk of Niemann and Answer. I got to be honest with you.
I have no problem with those guys. I certainly see how you're getting there and their ability. They're just good players and they keep it in the fairway. Obviously, Niemann, I worry if it becomes an around the green fest, it could be a problematic, but he's really improved. And he's just too talented for a sub-8. I think I'm going to look to some of these builds. I do want to ask you about, because it is a major and I want to get to these guys. What do you make of Tony Finau, who I've kind of relayed to Patrick Cantlay? I don't think it's as extreme, but certainly early in the year, Finau couldn't miss second, fourth, miscut, 10th and miscut lately. So where do you fall with him, or are you just kind of along with the field at a middling ownership?
Yeah, it's funny. My pre-note on him is perfect answer to kind of your question and who the heck knows with this guy.
Yeah.
I have no idea how to handicap him this week. I'm being totally honest, because we've seen the high upside that at 8,600, we would be rushing to put him in our lineup. But recently, and in spots where we think he should be playing good, he's not. So one of the tougher calls for me this week, which typically means I'll probably be like an 8-12% ownership range with nothing important. So that's honestly where I'm at. With Finau, could be his first win. Sure. I mean, he won on Puerto Rico, and that's an island event, I guess. And if the greens do run at 11.5, a bit, less speedy, or what's the word I'm looking for, but slower. Thank you. See, I'm a little slower, so it took me a little while to get to that answer. But if they are slower, I think that probably helps Finau out a little bit. Still, I just can't rush there. His form hasn't shown me anything. Again, I'd rather go down to Abraham Answer or Joaquin Niemann. I hate to keep bringing up those names, but how about, since I have, let's talk about a couple of pivots from them. And I think one of those, maybe even two, let's talk about two Australians, Adam Scott and Mark Leishman. I love both of them here this week. Scott's not been in great form, but we know that he loves to peak for majors. And Mark Leishman, on the other hand, is in good form.
Two guys that are, I think, harder to kind of conceptually grasp where they're at, but that makes it appealing in tournaments. There's no doubt about it. Leishman is he's just wild. He's been like that for a while now. No form, fifth at the Masters. Then he wins the Zurich with Cam Smith. He's been better lately. The putter's been doing a lot, so I do worry about that a little. But you got to just be willing to do that. I think if you're honing in on a single lineup or whatnot, Mark Leishman is probably not where I would go, to be honest. I think there's a lot of risk there. And there's someone like Paul Casey, who to me is just checking every box. He's played so well for so long, and it's a pure ball striker's course. But I get why you're going to the Aussies. I find it funny that you mentioned two Aussies. There is a third Aussie in the same range, but I don't even know how you click Jason Day at this point.
It is still for three straight weeks. I think now it's never again. That's my note, and I'm sticking with that.
I can't do it.
Just cannot do it. There's so many guys I'd rather play other than Jason Day. And if he ends up winning this week at 2% ownership, so be it. I'll be happy for him, because I like him as a person. But
we've moved on from being happy. If Jason Day wins this week, I will not be happy for him. And I root for him. I will be devastated, because I have played him for like a month straight.
Yeah. For me, I'm out. I cannot get there. I just can't.
He's not even in the US Open, mind you. Like,
yeah. Excuse me. And he doesn't even care that he's
He doesn't care. He's with NetJets. Like,
and I think a perfect little comment that I want to bring up now, because chat just asked us about it a little bit ago, is Lee Westwood. I think he's in this range as well. His press conference was today, and I happened to be watching it, and he is ready to jump ship to the PGL. Let me tell you, this guy is, where's my $50 million? I'll sign tomorrow. I haven't been offered it yet, but when I do, I'll be there. So that's just kind of the mindset of Lee Westwood. Now, does that mean he can't come out and win this week? I don't know. The form certainly regressed from what we saw at the Arnold Palmer and players, though.
It definitely did, but I will say I also saw that press conference. Lee Westwood is in so a great – he's in a great mind, and he just knows he has found a way to just, and I don't like to dig too much into this, but he just knows how his game is. He plays how he plays. He's in full control. And I think that's refreshing, that he's not trying to do things that maybe he can't do at this point. He just is playing his game. It's going to be ball striking. He's got to make some putts, And he can do that. Now, Matt Wallace is in the same range, who makes a lot of sense on a lot of levels. Bubba and Gary Woodland are there, which is just, I don't know what to say. And then you've got Higo as well. So
let's talk about Bubba for a second, because sure. I think he's worthy of some consideration, given the fact that Sam Burns, rightfully so, is getting a ton of attention. Yep. So we'll talk about both. Talk about Bubba first. If this course does play on the little bit longer side, and we know Bubba can shape it, he's played well on similar tracks and in good form. Would you play both him and Burns in the same lineup, or would you look to pivot here?
So I don't mind that, because I think Burns does a lot of the same things that Bubba does. It's hard to know with Bubba. I think no one outside of Bubba himself is going to be able to tell you if this is a Bubba course, how he's feeling, what's going on, but
where his head is at.
Yeah, he's the opposite of Westwood in that mindset, but it's still a guy with a lot of talent and not a lot of buzz. So I get it. And Sam Burns, every major, there's at least one guy who plays fantastic the week before and the pricing is already out, and he seems like the mega value, and that is Sam Burns this week.
Burns and maybe number two would be Berger. I think, you know, if Berger coming off a second place, again, likely probably would in 9,100, 9,200. Definitely. And I see value. Burns, he's not just doing it off the tee. He's doing it everywhere. He looks really good around the greens. He's certainly confident with the putter now. So I'm not concerned. In fact, I'm really not even concerned if you want to go Burns, Answer, and Neiman. If that's how you want to start the lineup, I know it's the three jockeyest golfers, but as I just mentioned, you can differentiate by going to, say, those three, getting one of Justin Thomas or Jordan Spieth, and not using all of your salary. If you believe that all of the 20% plus guys in this range, Burns, Neiman, and Answer, are going to get it done, that's what I'd recommend you do. There's plenty of ways to leave money on the table and not even really get concerned about it, using, say, even like a Keegan Bradley. Now, pretty good tee to green. He's starting to make putts. Is he of interest to you this week? Oh, obviously also a former PGA champion.
Yeah, Keegan's got one. So I get it. I have no problem with going to Keegan, but this is where I think when you get to the low sevens in particular, you want to start crafting a narrative. Like, okay, if Keegan is going to succeed here, why is he going to succeed? And what are the conditions that allow that to happen? And then take it backwards with your other five guys. To me, Keegan is not built for some of these type, you know, scenarios that we could see at Kiawah Island. But if he's able to lean on the ball striking and keep the putter at zero, you're going to get results. And we've got that for a while now. He's playing very consistent golf. I do think he's cash viable at this price. So I have no problem with it. I think Charlie Hoffman is in a similar mindset in a lot of these areas. He's been playing really consistent golf for a while now.
Yeah, there's no doubt about that. Couple of other guys in this range that we can chat about. Let me get my notes up here. Higo, I heard you mention him really briefly. This is a guy that we have absolutely no idea about, but clearly on the European tour, he is nothing but fire. Kind of reminds me of Rasmus Højgaard, though, when he came out of COVID, came out absolutely firing, and saw him come over here and maybe not do as well as we had thought. He goes a lefty South African. We do love our South Africans on this show, Ben. Charles Schwartzel is probably one that I would play over Higo this week. I'll take the wait and see. And hopefully the waiting part, you know, he won't win this week.
Yeah, I'm not. Usti, Charles, Aaron Wise, even though he plays under an American flag, he was born in South Africa. I would take all of that. The thing about Higo, I thought when he was coming over, I thought, wow, this is going to be pretty interesting. 6,500, maybe he's my last man in. No, 7,400. Yeah. That's a huge ask. Him or Matt Wallace, him or Westwood, him or Keegan, him or Watts, him or Siwoo. It's not, there's just no room for me to go to a guy that I know nothing about.
Let's talk about the 7,200 range. Wise, Siwoo, Harris English, all right there, as well as Russell Henley and Billy Horschel. Since I just mentioned Horschel, I'll talk about him first. For me, he's in the Ty Hatton category, which used to be the John Rahm category, which is their temperament for me is just not good for a major. And the results have kind of shown nothing there for Hatton, nothing really great for Horschel. I'd rather click Harris English this week, and I'd rather click Siwoo Kim. So I just don't have that many spots. Are you in that same camp, or do you want to play Billy this week?
No, I'm in that same camp. It's not to say that Billy Horschel can't make a cut here or even play well. It's just about How many times do I need a player in this range? And if I do, you've got Siwoo, who I'm not super sold on, but I do think the Pete Dye, you know, we had some really sharp people, Gangrene, a sub this morning, and a couple other guys talking about Siwoo and very, very real points. I worry a little about the length, but it's not like he can't get it done here. And then I do want to bring up one of the many tools that we have behind the paywall is Alex and you and the whole team has developed a tool about the official world golf rankings, which get a ton of buzz, but we kind of have our own and it can be used to identify maybe some things in the betting market, but you could also apply it to DFS. And Russell Henley is a guy that is perpetually undervalued in some of these metrics. So I do look at him and I think if you get that hot iron week, as he's been known to do, Russell Henley's a guy that can hang around, and at 72, he's someone I'm going to try to get some shares of.
Yeah, and it won't take you a lot with Russell Henley to get overweight there because you've got guys like Jason Kokrak and Cam Tringale who are trending towards 10%, and because there's a ton of options in that range, they're soaking up a ton of the ownership. So of those two, I'm obviously not playing Cam Tringale.
No.
I will play Jason Kokrak a little bit because he's kind of shown me that he's pretty much there and all the stats look good. I know that the putting is much better than in years past, which is due for regression. Still 7,100. I'm okay. You getting to Tringale over Kokrak? Are you saying no to both?
Definitely not getting to Tringale over Kokrak. I'm also pretty close to saying no to both though, to be honest. Kokrak is someone that if I play, you know, like Bubba and Burns and those type, maybe he comes in. Chat just mentioned Dean Burmeister. We'll get to him. Like there are guys that fit that profile.
That's deep. Yeah, that's deep.
I just don't know if I want Kokrak on like my Reed and Spieth teams where I'm like, okay, around the green is going to be an emphasis. I don't think that meshes too well. So again, you just want to make sure it blends. You don't need all six guys the same way. But in general, I do like to have most of my teams have a theme.
When, I was preparing for the show a little earlier, I sent out a tweet about this next golfer and his ability to just dominate the DFS points category because of hole-in-ones. And I was looking for a hole-in-one prop on Corey 7,600 20% owned Connors this week. Haven't seen one yet. When I find it,
it's probably off the board because they can't set it high enough. That's insane.
Again, decent setup, but we have seen a little bit of regression at least since the Masters.
I said that as a joke like months ago, and he literally has had like three hole-in-ones in a month. He's a world-class ball striker, and we've said for a long time, not just us, everybody, if he could putt, watch out. And he started to putt at times, and he's been fantastic. I do think this is going to challenge him around the green, and around the green is going to be an emphasis, so if he doesn't correct that, he's lost in 5 of 6. I think you can get away from him. It's not to say that if you're going pure ball strikers, Corey Connors isn't in the conversation. But to me, you've got some guys there. You've got Casey. Sergio is a different type of player, but you've got Neiman and Anser. So there's not a ton of room for Corey Connors in terms of the popularity for me.
No, and I think, like you said, there are other guys. Like I think Matt Wallace's form is trending to be just as good as Connors. And Wallace has shown us that while he may not have tremendous upside in the majors, he's made the cut in all of the last seven. So he's putting up points for you. I would rather eat a little bit of the chalk there, which I think is probably half the ownership of Connors anyway. So that's, you know, if we're going that way in that range. So a couple of other guys, one that I wanted to bring up, a golfer that had a 36 hole lead in a former PGA championship. One that we should have probably considered in our Australian bunch. And that's Matt Jones, guy that just won a Honda Classic. Funny enough, Justin Thomas won the Honda Classic and then won the PGA Championship a couple months later. So I'm not saying Matt Jones is going to win, but I think it's a decent spot. I think he's projected at 2%, 3% owned. I think 10% in Millie Makers is totally fine for that, you know, 3-4x leverage.
So he's one that I think it's pretty simple for me. If a course looks like it's going to truly be firm and fast and it's going to negate the distance to an extent, I think Matt Jones is somewhat in play. If he is not able to do that, just looking at where he plays well, I think he'd be overpowered here. It's a lot of the mindset from Aaron Hills. We didn't know what to expect there, and it turned out that a lot of it was overblown. Those guys could take advantage. Brian Harman was in that tournament for a very long time. So
yeah, till the end.
Till the end. And I think that's what you could see here. But if there is a reason that this plays like a 7,800-yard course, I don't know if Matt Jones is where I'd want to go.
Yeah, let's talk about Harmon. Do you think his short game is good enough to compete on either side? If it plays like Aaron Hills and does play longer, you think we could get a repeat? And subsequently, if it's shorter, do you think that also means we could get a repeat of Aaron Hills?
So, yeah, I do think that when you have an out like that, you can always bail yourself out. And if he's able to get 50 yards of roll, of course. Now, if it's brutal and it's windy and he has to hit, you know, woods and short long irons into all these holes, it's going to be a tough ask, because that's where the advantage of the distance, I think, comes out, not just on driving, but on your second shots out of the rough, things like that. So that's where I draw the distinction with a guy like Harmon.
I agree. He's in my player pool. I think he's a good target. If you want to play the cash game, like we said, Hovland, Reed, Smith, Harmon, I think that's a really quality start. Again, I don't know that there's enough GPP winning upside there. I think the winner is coming out of the high range. And of course, you know, we'll have some hot takes, and we'll do the hot takes tomorrow night, though. I'm going to come on and join the guys for at least the back half of the show. So stay tuned for that. Kind of hinted a little bit about my feelings, but still some big things to give away tomorrow night during that segment. Move around in this low 7K range. Still plenty of golfers to talk about. We've got Cam Champ, who looked awful in the first round, maybe a little bounce back in the second round. We've got Charlie Hoffman, who statistically grades out pretty well and is playing some of the best golf of his career, I would go out and say. And then there's Aaron Wise, who you've already brought up. Of that range, tell me some guys that you like a little bit more than others.
So, yeah, I think that Wise makes sense. It's been mostly a putting issue. He can drive well, you know, keep it in there, lean on the ball striking. He can scramble. He's just got to make some putts. Hoffman, we've talked about a little. It's just a range. Again, it's about prioritizing. You're not going to find massive edges in the low sevens. And if you did, they're going to be mega chalk. So that's where you got to look at Alex's projections. You want to look at the splits, maybe you correlate to a tee time stack. You prioritize, and then you start adding them into your lineups. That's at least how I'm going to approach it.
No, I think it's a great call. A couple of unknowns in this region too, like Bobby McIntyre. We really have ultimately no idea where he's going to fall in the grand scheme of things, because we haven't seen him. This is going to sound terrible. We haven't seen him tested against the PGA Tour pros that much. He's done fantastic on the European Tour. That doesn't always translate into, you know, continued success. We've seen it certainly, you know, with like Lee Westwood, and he could certainly be on a Lee Westwood career trajectory. But Lee Westwood also has no major wins. Now, he doesn't have to win at 7K. So is Bobby Mack at least in your player pool this week because of the perceived upside that we have from him?
No, he's not. It's a guy that he's shown some talent. I was impressed at the Masters at what he did. But to me, more often than not, you're incurring too much risk. If he was in a price pool point where I had no one else, I would probably look to him. But you've got Chris Kirk and Griot and many other guys we just talked about, a couple $100 more, and Ryan Palmer's $100 less. There's too many other targets to blindly back Bobby Mack.
There aren't many lefties that play on either tour. It's just a stat. But you see that some of the best lefties of the last generations have won at Augusta. And of course, there's that prevailing theory that it is actually set up for a lefty. So that's why a little bit better results than maybe you or I expected, just using that a little bit to his advantage. I don't think we're going to have that advantage this week. That's not to say he won't go out and play well. So I do have him small percentage in my player pool at this point. A couple of PGA Tour pros, though, on the complete other side of McIntyre is Matt Kuchar and the aforementioned Ricky Fowler, who's here on a special invite. Do you have either in your pool this week?
Yes, especially in the mercy. You got mercy status.
It's the total. You have done so much to grow our game through State Farm commercials that we have to give you a spot.
Ricky just doesn't, you know, again, he lost 2.5 strokes at Byron Nelson. He gains off the tee. He has to, I say it every week and I will continue. If he can flip the putter, I think Ricky could be okay. I really do, but he hasn't done that yet. And he's going to need to, because without the putter, he has no hope. He's never been that good of a ball striker, to be honest. So he's got the off the tee game working, but he has to flip the putter. Maybe a sliver of Ricky, because I do believe it's still in there to an extent, but he's in the Jason Day camp of you're just blindly backing him. And I know this better than most. It could be a long time before you get results, and that's probably a fool's errand.
Since we're talking about a couple of guys that you like to play in Fowler and Day, let's talk about Griot. And maybe this is the best setup for a major that he could ask for?
Probably. I mean, beggars can't be choosers. He obviously could never deal with the Open Championship. I think we could rule that out. Lean on the ball striking. Try to avoid scrambling as much as possible. I think that'll be the key. Can't get into a situation where he's getting up and down a ton. That's just not his style.
Average green in regulation back in 2012 was 56%, which doesn't really go with the way Grillo plays. If that's going to be this year as well, he won't be here for the weekend if that's the case. And we haven't seen him play in majors, so I'm going to skip him, as good as the form has been recently. Another guy maybe that's more cash viable than he is GPP. I think he gives you a top 30 capped upside, and that's Ian Poulter. I do think he makes the weekend, given that it's half of the field. I just can't see any upside for him, though, then.
Yeah, him and Ryan Palmer, to me, are pretty cash viable. They're just making cuts, playing well. Ian Poulter's got experience at this course. I have no problem with them. And I do think in general, the Euros have the slight advantage here.
For sure. And we got about 5 minutes left before, I believe it's the NHL strategy show kicking off after us. So we will go through a couple of more guys in the deep dives, and any of the golfers that we don't get to talk about that you're interested in. Perfect time to bring that up tomorrow night. We'll cover that on the show when I join you guys for a nice little round table. We're going to tell you who we're fading as well. Our full fades or our biggest fades of the week. Going to be some great info there. So if we don't get to them, don't worry. We will get to them tomorrow. Or of course, Ben, ask us in our Slack chat. We go throughout the whole day there. So if we miss it in the next little bit, make sure you get to us and we will answer it for you. So top two guys under 7K, Stewie Sink and Ryan Palmer, wrote down that they both have been having much better seasons than most people projected, not just me or you. And Stewie Sink kind of loves these island courses, so I really don't mind him this week. I don't know if I can play him in my best lineup, but I might be forced to if I really want to get Thomas and Spieth in there.
Yeah, I see where you're going. I do worry again, even during this ridiculous run. His off-the-tee game is weak. It's always been weak. And, I mean, it's not surprising, but his irons have been fantastic, and his putter has been good. So I get it. I think it'll put tremendous strain on him if it's not firm and fast, if it's, you know, if he's really going to be hitting some of these long, long irons. But it's also a range where you're looking for made cuts now, and you have a lot of Euros here. Bez is here. John Catlin is here. Peters, Rasmus. I don't know how
Horsfield.
Horsfield, like, it's tricky. You've got them against guys like Charles, Cam Davis, Carlos Ortiz, and Sink. I tend to look to experience when I can, but that's the balancing act you have to deal with in the sixes.
So I think it is. It's a really great area to break down, because I think that if you are going super aggressive again, which is two guys above 10K, you're going to rely on somebody here to get inside the top 20, especially to win that $20 millionaire maker against 177,000 other entries. You are going to probably need one of these guys to get inside the top 15, top 20. And Ben, I'm not going to lie, one of maybe the most tried and tested of all of them is even cheaper, and that's 6,600 in Alex Noren. And if I'm going below 7,000 and I need the salary, talk me out of clicking this guy's name right now.
I mean, look, you're not going to get me to do it. He was my favorite player of the week last week. He absolutely killed me in betting. He came in 21st, and I had already budgeted that I wheeled him last week. So I had top 20, top 10, top five, and outright cashed none of them. But you know what? The signs were there. He was in that tournament all week, just didn't have the Sunday. So I'm with you. Noren also played in 2012 here. He's built for weird conditions, has to survive off the tee, but I have no problem going to him in a range that I think he's clearly one of the value options in the mid sixes.
He definitely is. And again, you're going to need that for your more aggressive lineup. So he is a name I'm clicking. I am clicking Charles Schwartzel's name, but are we maybe just a tad late on him, or was last week the week to do it? Or has he got one more in it?
Listen, I've been very impressed after Zurich and the Masters. He's found something, maybe pushing the envelope a little, but the point you've brought up several times, I think it can't be stressed enough. You don't need to have 40% of these guys. You know, you look at Alex's projections, if they're 4 to 6%, you could take 2x and you're only allocating 1/10 of your portfolio or whatnot. So these are a lot of guys down here I'm comfortable having exposure to, because I don't need a lot to get leverage.
No, you definitely don't. And even in the Sink Palmer, if you want to go to those more popular guys in this range, They're only about 6% projected owned right now, so you're not getting that much. A couple of other cheapies as we, you know, wind up our show here. And, of course, we've got about, you know, definitely over 150 people watching right now.
Yeah,
I'm gonna pull from my friend Josh over there, Josh Engelman, and ask you guys to bump up the likes. And, of course, on the subscribe portion, I'm going to be coming out with a couple more short-form videos. Plus, you're going to have the top contenders betting video coming out in the next little bit. So some really great content for the PGA Championship here this week. Couple of more guys. Taylor Gooch, he did play decently well last week. Another guy that's, you know, below 65 or 6,600. And then a guy that you and I love to talk about. I've got to mention him because he is the cheapest PGA Tour golfer this week that you can roster. And I'm not talking about Jim Herman. I'm talking about JT Poston, JT Postman. Given the fact that he's 6,100, are you going to click him once or no? I am. I'm not going to lie to you. I'm going to click him once.
Maybe. I'm going to punt that question for tomorrow night, okay, 8 o'clock right. Eastern, you, me, and Eric Lindquist.
Got it.
That's going to be a tough one, but I do think there are names. Gooch, HV3. You can at least give them a look. You know, I'm going to clarify. I'm going to dive in this afternoon, see what we can find, and then tomorrow night we'll talk about lineup construction, because the key with this, I don't think you play any of these guys if you don't have to. But if you're saying, I want Spieth, I want JT, I want Hovland, well, you better find a way to do it, and this is how. So on that note, I think that's where we're set up. It's going to be fun. I can't wait to dive more into this tomorrow. If you have questions, hit us up on Twitter. Our handles are on the screen. And certainly tomorrow night, we'll be back at it. You, me, and Eric. I cannot wait.
Cannot wait either. And if you guys aren't able to join us, of course, check us out on Slack or on Twitter. And good luck this week at the PGA Championship. We'll see you next time.